Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75, 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
We'll be right back. Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back, telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. Man, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change comes to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 a piece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She just hit you in your face. She a dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She struck you a motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass. She a
nigga. That nigga hurting himself.
You from Nuke State.
Look, the main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you can do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield? See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavored Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them, which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place, there's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is, and it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
It's My House is titled Three. We got this from Daryl out of New York. He sent me a text this morning about a neighborhood that is it's 3D printer. they're creating a neighborhood. The neighborhood I'm particularly talking about. And I don't have my phone on, that phone, from the text there. Daryl, if you're there, press 1 so we can get your comments on it because you inspired this morning's podcast. But anyway, I found, I'm about to play an audio of a neighborhood being 3D printed in Mexico. They're actually printing their houses, making the houses or manufacturing houses using a 3D process. So today's podcast is titled 3D Neighborhoods. I should have renamed it. What? Printed 3D Neighborhoods and Solar Villages. So I'll play about 3 clips on that, and then if you got any comments, fine. What we're doing, let me give you an update. Last week, Darlene Lewis, she ordered what she needed to order, so she got her materials yesterday to set up her debt-free new office, okay, spoke to her yesterday, so she's got that in. She ordered that last Friday. All right, and then this morning, probably about a couple of hours ago, if that, I ordered what we need, and we're going to take, as soon as it comes in, we're setting up a solar village here in Florida. So we'll give you updates on that, and we'll be taking videos and all that other stuff. It's finally, I can say this is coming together. Now we're actually going to be playing real-life Monopoly. We got the land already, and we're going to replicate that same, just like the board game Monopoly. You buy the land first, okay? Then you start putting houses on it now, or housing on it. And you know what? I'm telling people, matter of fact, I'm doing it. Matter of fact, I did it last week with Darlene Lewis and the partnership. I did it this morning, less than 2 hours ago myself. Budget yourself $200 a month if you can. Let's do it this way. Budget anywhere from $100 to $200 a month for housing materials. Okay, and we're going to have workshops on this where you can really... in-person workshops as well as webinars, but the in-person will be the best because you can actually get the hands-on. But in any event, I'm going to play these clips on 3D printing, and then we're going to bring Daryl on, anybody else who wants to comment. Once again, today's podcast is titled Inspired by Daryl, one of our loyal listeners in New York City. 3D printed neighborhoods and solar villages.
The world's first 3D printed neighborhood now has its first homes in a rural town in southern Mexico. Joining me now with more on this is Brett Hagler, CEO and co-founder of New Story, the nonprofit that helped build these homes. Good morning to you, Brett. This is an incredible undertaking. How do you make a home with a 3D printer?
Yeah, it's great to be on. Good morning. New Story partnered with an organization called Icon, and we created a 3D printing home machine that can print a home using a proprietary cement mix. And how I explain it to my mom is it's almost like soft serve ice cream coming out, and it layers a built-to-last house.
Built-to-last. And how long does it take to create one home?
About 24 printing hours.
That is amazing.
And these are, the first two printed homes that families will live in, families in extreme poverty in rural Mexico. And the really encouraging thing about that is it's only going to get faster from here, because it's just the very beginning.
And there's something unique about these homes, apart from the fact that they're built with a 3D printer. People that live in these homes are in a seismic zone that is prone to flooding. How will these homes protect these residents?
Yeah, so we, it would have been a lot easier to do the first 3D printed neighborhood in an area that wasn't seismic and was not prone to flooding. But because our mission is to end global homelessness, we want to work in environments that are very challenging. And so this was a proof point that you can bring breakthrough innovation to the areas that need it most. And that's how we designed the machine so that it could work in these environments.
How much does it cost to create one of these homes?
We unfortunately can't share the exact cost yet because it's still so early. But the homes are lower priced than a traditionally built house.
And your goal, as I understand it, is to build 50 new homes by the end of 2020. What happens after that?
Yeah, so that'll conclude the world's first 3D printed neighborhood. We hope this will be a showcase to share with the world what's possible and to bring innovation for families that are in the most need. And then from there, we will scale out 3D printing machines. And with our partner Icon, we will bring homes and communities to families in need around the world.
Amazing stuff. Brett, thank you so much. Glad you could be with us. All the best.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Printing opens almost unlimited design possibilities. It uses very resilient materials. It produces almost zero waste. It can be done much, much, much more affordably than conventional building methods.
A traditional style New Story community of about 100 homes will take close to a year to complete. With a 3D home printer, if we just had one, it would take about 3 months to complete the community.
Thanks for checking out CNBC on YouTube. Be sure to subscribe to stay up to date on all of the day's biggest stories. You can also click on any of the videos around me to watch the latest from CNBC. Thanks for watching.
Good.
The Schubach family in Hessikofen is clearly pretty keen on the sun. They use it for heating their home, and even the doll's house has solar panels. It's not very sunny on this cold winter's day, but it's about 18 degrees in the apartment. The wood-burning stove helps to boost the temperature.
It's very comfortable using solar heating. There are no constraints, really. When it's cold, I start a fire and just leave it burning all day, so it's nice and warm in here. We try to keep an average temperature of 22 to 23 degrees.
Solar power is used to heat the apartment and the water. The energy comes from the 16 square meters of solar collectors on the roof. Adrian Schuppach built the house himself a year and a half ago using Minergie's sustainable building standards. Only houses with specific energy consumption qualify for the Minergie label. The Schuppach family is no exception in the village of Hessikofen. All 260 inhabitants are linked to the solar network. There are 80 houses, 46 of which have sun collectors on the roofs. Mayor Thomas Steiner is proud of their record, but feels they could do even more.
We have the highest amount of solar coverage in Switzerland, with 10% of all south-facing surfaces now covered with solar panels. But we have another 90% at our disposal, so the potential is enormous.
Organic farmer Niklaus Bolliger is capitalizing on this potential. He helped to set up the Optima Solar Cooperative, which rents roofs and covers them with solar panels. The latest solar installation is on Bolliger's own barn roof. This should soon be producing 23,000 kilowatt hours of electricity per year, enough to power 6 family homes in Switzerland. Hessikofen has won recognition for its clean energy projects. In summer 2010, the village received the Swiss Solar Prize. This encouraged the community to do more in this direction.
Because of this, we built even more solar installations, and new buildings are now automatically fitted with solar panels.
But the villagers don't want to rest on their laurels. In 2010, they set up their own solar generating station to power their street lights, becoming the first community in Switzerland to do so. They now want to replace their old lamps with new energy-saving LED lights.
Our power station produces 12,000 kilowatt hours per year. The 37 street lamps currently use 13,000 kilowatt hours. But when we replace them with LED lamps, we'll only need 8,000 kilowatt hours. So the power station produces much more than we need to light the streets.
When these solar pioneers are not cooking up new projects, they're soaking in the colleagues' jacuzzi. This too is heated by solar collectors, of course.
Sunrise, sunrise, looks like morning in your eyes.
All right, today's podcast is titled 3D Printed Neighborhoods and Solar Villages. Those two, all the clips I played this morning, is where the ball is going. Particularly the last three. I'm going to get to you in a moment. The first clip where the 3D printing neighborhood, where they're printed, when they're doing a, they're printing homes, or houses rather, the location in Mexico. In Tabasco, Mexico. Now, Tabasco, Mexico, you can look it up online, has a population of a little bit under 25,000 people. It's got 24,731. You got a population of actually 2 million. Hold it, Tabasco, yeah, they got 2 million. But where they're at, the population is much smaller in Tabasco. Tabasco is a, you know what, I got to get to specific city. Because typically, large cities won't go for this type of extreme innovation. But generally speaking, there are less rules and regulations in Mexico. Mexico overall is less regulated than the larger cities in the United States. But typically, where you see this type of innovative or extreme housing is in smaller populated areas. Now, the audio on that we played on Hessikofen, which is in Switzerland, Heisikopf in Switzerland has a population of under 300 people. Once again, and typically your smaller jurisdictions, you don't have the big monopolized energy companies that basically, and the reason why they are not monopolies is because basically they're the only game in town. And you have a lot of that right here in the United States. However, you don't have to move to Switzerland. You don't have to move to Tabasco, Mexico. You can do it right here in the United States. There are people doing it here in the United States. You just have to find an area where there's a town. It could be an unincorporated place or an incorporated municipality, but it's small. It has a tiny population. I would say look for places that have a population of under 400 people. Oh, you know what? Let me raise that. Go no higher than 2,500. Me personally, under 400. But populate towns that have a population of no more than 2,500 people. The lower you go in numbers as far as population, and that's what I call, in my opinion, you find the real United States of America, where there's opportunity regardless of race or color, religion, right now in 2020. In my opinion, the real United States of America is found in places where there's a population of 2,500 people or less. And they have less government. That's what I go by. I don't need a police force. Don't need a fire station. Now, some of these places have, you know, maybe they might have a volunteer fire department or a volunteer this or that. There's a lot out there to choose from, and you can also start your own thing, which people are doing. Matter of fact, one of the people I like to get on the podcast, she's an African-American woman, goes by the name of ES, initials ES. She's in Ghana, but what she's doing in Ghana could be done right here in the United States too, and people do it and are doing it. She's basically building a village, an off-grid village, which falls in line with this. So in any event, like I said, last week, Darlene Lewis ordered her materials. Now, she got them and talked to her yesterday. I ordered mine. I ordered more, and we're going to have a setup of that when it comes in. It'll probably take a few days for it to get in. Of course, you know I'm an Amazon person, so I ordered mine through Amazon. So did Darlene Lewis. And then we'll get to the point where we'll be actually manufacturing and then selling it that way. In any event, let's go to Daryl here out of New York. He was the one. Daryl, good morning.
Good morning, L.A. How you doing?
Fine, fine. Now, share with us the article that you texted to me this morning on 3D neighborhoods, because I think that was a guy who was formerly homeless that came up with that.
What was so interesting was the guy named Shade too, and I was wondering if it's the Shade that you know, the Shade Show. I was wondering if it's that guy too. I just happened to see the name.
Oh, you know what? As a matter of fact, one of the first, this goes back 6 years, one of the first, he was within the first probably five interviews within the first 3 to 5 shows I did was Shay out of Detroit, Michigan, the Shay Show, yeah.
And when I saw, yes, you were saying?
Yeah, he's out of Detroit, though.
Okay. And the funny thing about it is that New York is doing this thing. I ran across, they're doing a lot of, New York would like people to know about a lot of stuff. And they had this guy was running for office one time was saying the rent is too damn high. And so I went to like, say again?
Yeah, I remember that guy out of New York. He was running for some kind of public office or even something like president. And his slogan was rent is too damn high.
Yeah, and I actually went to a business meeting with the guy, controller. You know, controllers for the state, they control all the money. And the controller said he's tired of people talking about they cannot afford to live in New York. And but you have a lot of people, some people against education, some people against a lot of things. But I ran into something because just like, you know, you talk about Taft, Oklahoma, and you talk about, you know, certain communities for like, and you don't need a police force. So I'm just wondering when, you know, what's the crime rate or what's the problems in the areas that has been, that has been established that certain crime didn't hit them, like racial crime or, you know, ethnic crime, certain crimes that don't hit them. And then if it does, if people do, have something that gives the law. They say, hey, look, you know, this neighborhood, you know, like, because you have, like, communities and you have neighborhoods. You have neighborhoods and communities. But neighborhoods are this and then communities, you know, they have their rules and regulations. And I was wondering, like, certain neighborhoods, you say, like, because you say you don't need a police force. So I'm, like, wondering, like, and it's a lot of people out there to start the neighborhoods, but I say like all the communities, all the villages. But once they come into this, new living area, what jobs are available for them? Because I remember you said something about a ghost town for $200,000. It had a theater, it had all type of stuff in there. And I'm just wondering, like, are people willing to just stay there? And, you know, make that a thriving community, you know, instead of going on the outside, like, you know, people want to go, you know, leave Taft. Can everything come there? You know, it's all about location, you know, instead of like driving so many miles to your job. Can they just have it right there in that community where people don't have to just go out?
Well, Daryl, as you well know, and a lot of other people know or noticing, we live in the age of telecommuting. So now you can live remotely, and basically if you can get an internet connection, you can work anywhere in the world. If you got a smartphone, tablet, laptop, or whatever, God knows how many people, millions of people work online now. I mean, it's a lifestyle for many people now. One of my favorite YouTubers, Mary Jane Byron, she's like 24 years old, turned 24 or something like that. She's visited over 100 countries, and her income comes through YouTube. But she's not an exception. There are countless people that blog on YouTube and Patreon and podcasts or whatever that they earn their money online. So a lot of them travel. And they, as long as they got internet connection and a device, access to a device, which now you can probably go to any public library on the planet, or you got people in remote parts of Africa that are making a living with smartphones. So you don't have to go into a brick and mortar for that. As far as the crime thing goes, just from my personal observation, the larger the population, it's just the law of averages. The larger the population, the more occurrence of crime that you're going to have. In a small town that's got 100, 300 people, everybody basically knows everybody, and any crime that might be happen might happen to a vacant house that an outsider that doesn't live in that community, they'll break in that house and they'll probably steal. I mean, if they got an air conditioning system or copper pipes, that's the type of crime that I've noticed that happens in mostly tiny towns. But that doesn't come from the people that live in the town. That comes from people that might have a drug addiction and they they run the circuit with these little towns, you know, looking for vacant houses. Because when I in Taft, I slept at the first house I got there, I slept with the front door wide open all night. Now I can't pull that off in Chicago, or San Francisco or Los Angeles. You know.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Anyway. I would say yet because one thing the slums in New York at one time, like the South Bronx or East New York, and the gentrification and it's a lot of things that's going on because right now New York is it's like the Walking Dead, with this coronavirus, and that's affecting the housing situation now too. You there, LA? Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I'm listening. I can hear you.
They're saying the coronavirus is affecting the housing situation too, because now people are staying home. How are they going to pay bills? This is a way they're getting evicted, not going to work. So this is affecting the housing market now too. If you don't go to work, then you got some jobs. They'll pay you if you don't come to work if you're affected. But then you have some other jobs, they're not paying you. Like people not, going to stores buying sandwiches. The people who normally work in the delis, or the restaurants, or the movie theaters, a lot of places, these things, people are scared now, so these guys are out of work. Where are they going to get their money from? Then you have
I'm pretty sure, I don't know what Governor Cuomo was doing, but I'm pretty sure that the system in New York will probably account for that or adjust for that because, particularly if a community is quarantined or the government says this whatever activity can't take place, you got to adjust for that. And then the some jobs you can't do remotely. Some like if you're making something, okay, unless that employer or that business makes, in other words, if let's say you're making cakes in New York City, then you might have to make accommodations where, okay, we can't operate here, but maybe we can go to a location in another part of the state or nearby and make cakes and then go from there. So
That would be good, but I think that's the problem with China right now. A lot of people are relying on imports and stuff like that. Because I remember at one time, you used to get chicken. There was no feather on the chicken. All of a sudden, now you see a whole bunch of feathers popping up on chicken. And I found out they're getting a lot of chicken imports. But you got so many places not regulated. I know, in 10 years, they're trying to retrofit all the buildings for New York to have them green. A lot of buildings have to be, green. They have to be, for the environment, low carbon and stuff like that. And they have to have this within 10 years. So the building things are going to take, going green. That's going to be big business.
Yep. Van Jones, I read his first book on the green collar economy. I think he came out with a second book. I haven't read that yet, but, there's a lot of opportunity for that, but the coronavirus, I don't know much about it, but I think they're trying to head it off or do prevention because more people die from the flu every year. More people die from pneumonia all the time.
Okay. Yeah, you remember that thing I sent you that the NAC? You remember you read up on it. You see what it helps for with the flu and stuff like that, And yeah, so a lot of symptoms that the people is encountering, but they're not gonna push certain things out you know, because of overpopulation. But it's not a problem. I tell people, oh, you see these four stories or these two stories, come back in about 5 years, it's going to be like 20 stories. The same three stories that you see across the street, because everybody want to come to New York, everybody want to come to America. I remember when they had the 1984 Olympics in Atlanta, everybody wanted to go to Atlanta. You know, I'm hearing everybody wants to go to Atlanta. But the same thing that's going to happen in New York. And as we talked about before, all the millions and millions of acres that nobody has gone there, these places, they're going to start developing them because, it's not overpopulated. It's just that they haven't, you know, like the rainforest and so on like that. But it's many other places that they're going to chop down these trees and, build places for people to live, you know, like that. But, you just got a lot of people like love these bright lights. It's not all about the bright lights. You know, they come to these bright lights and they get lost. They come here with one goal in mind, and then, you know, they end up family. They end up, getting stuck, you know, because then, like, the rent's high, but they don't know what else to do. Because I always say like this, you got, when it comes to, like, you know, you talk about social credit and things of that nature. That's good, too. But if we do business, we might as well do business. Because once the business lose, once it flop, hey, you know, you're not held accountable. It's like the bailout. When all the auto dealers and all this other thing that happened, you guys got a bailout. The banks got a bailout. And the same thing with businesses. They get a bailout. If they flop, they flop. You know, but if we use our social, if anything happened, a lot of times you have to use the social just as a signer, you know? And, it doesn't have to be you. There's many, many ways to do business. But I always say like this, that can get things done much more quicker, you know? And sometimes you say, Ellie, it's that old saying, what you say, get your own shit. Not worrying about other people's shit. You like to help? Sometimes you like to help. But some people, they don't want anything, Ellie. It's sad, but that's the way the world is sometimes. It's very sad.
Well, planet with approaching 8 billion people, like, and I've told this, given this stat, and people can verify it online. You can take, and I'm up to 8 million people. You can take every person on the planet right now. Let's put the figure at 8 million. We're not at 8 million yet, but I'm going to put it at 8 million. You can take 8 million people, gather from every corner of the earth right now, and put them all in on the continent of Africa, and everybody would have at least 1 acre of land with 11 million acres of land left over. It's a lot of space.
That's plenty of room to do a whole lot of stuff. That's plenty of room to do a whole lot of stuff.
Right. So we're nowhere. Yeah, I mean, it might, now, like, say, if you're in a place like, there's certain areas on the planet, let's take right here in the United States, you know, if you take, like, from Washington, D.C. to Boston, okay, and there are gaps in those areas, too, you have, that's a very highly populated corridor of the United States. But there are gaps in between because, I mean, between D.C. and Baltimore, that's like, 45-minute, you know, separation between the two. In between those two, you got pockets where nobody's living. And then you go from Baltimore to Philly, you know, you got pockets where nobody's living. And then you go from Philadelphia to New England. We're talking about from D.C. to New York City is 212 miles from border to border.
Okay.
City limit to city limit. So, if you know where to go, because they have experts. I mean, they're suburbs, but then there are a lot of crowded suburbs. But then they're exurbs, and then they're rural areas in that stretch. Between D.C. and New York. So, and
that lady from Ghana. Okay.
Less expensive housing.
You ever think about going to Ghana? You ever think about visiting that lady out there in Ghana, LA?
Which lady?
The lady who's doing that village. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I'm a cop. I'm gonna reach out to her because I watch her videos about 2-3 times a week. She's not the first and only one doing it, but I'm gonna try to get her on this podcast.
She hasn't been on yet.
Not on my podcast, no.
Oh, okay, all right.
She hasn't been on mine. The only people I had one guy, Julius Magala, about 4 years ago. He lives in Uganda, and we did an interview based this time in Uganda. He was talking about solar, and then there's probably one or two other people. Ghana's like a 6-7 hour time difference depending on what time of year. Uganda.
Okay.
But she's ES is her what do we call it? YouTube channel is titled Eat, Love, Migrate. Very educational. And she's building a village with basically local materials. I mean, they make the bricks, and you can see the process. She shows you the whole process where they made the bricks out of what the earth, you know, local materials, which that's an ancient building technique. So she's not going to Home Depot or Lowe's and Menards or any equipment like that that might be in Ghana. Now, I'm sure in Accra, the big city, or a place like Lagos, they might have, well, you know what? I'll ask Bianca about that because that's not my lane as of yet. But she bought some land in a rural area in Ghana, and they're basically building using, materials, that earth, and they shape it up and sunbake the bricks, and like that's why I'm gonna have her on, so she can basically explain. But like I said, if you go to her YouTube channel, Eat, Love, Migrate, she does a live stream practically every day, sometimes twice a day. So
that ghost town you was telling that you spoke about like last year sometime, you know the one I'm talking about, like it was like for $200,000.
I mentioned two ghost towns.
Okay, now if
that was somewhere out in Idaho, I think, and then
I'm not sure. Okay.
And there's a ghost town. There's a bunch of ghost towns out there, but there's a ghost town. What's that? Deerfield, Colorado. Deerfield, Colorado is a ghost town now, but it was built by a black man. It was vibrant at one time until the Great Migration, when black folks headed towards the cities. And essentially, because what a city offers, particularly a big city like New York, Chicago, it offers comfort and convenience.
All that could be done in the ghost town. Convenience could be done in the ghost town. Comfort can be done in the ghost town.
It can't yet, particularly now in the age of the internet, it can be done, and that's why I'm saying that's where the ball is swinging now. You're not going to get a whole bunch of people to – I think it's going to happen like on a social network basis. In other words, a group of people.
Word of mouth, yes.
Family. It might be a group of small people that they go in and they go in. It might be 2, 3, 4, 5 of them. But they'll go in – and they'll help each other build their homes, where they have privacy, but they're still close together. They'll share transportation. You got people doing that right now. Matter of fact, you got communities of people that their homes are vans or their homes are cars. And we're not talking about they were forced in a way. This is a preferred lifestyle, and they have get-togethers in very remote places. So you're going to see. I mean, YouTube is, man, you see videos around the clock on that type of stuff. So you have some people that they just need communities of people that can tell you from coast to coast, here's a place where you can park safely, car, van, camping, what have you. Because, like I say, and Pleasant Stephan said this a few times, a lot of your larger cities are basically for the wealthy because a place like New York City, which New York City's nice. Anything you can think of, it's there. Places to eat, people to meet, opportunities, but you got to pay for that. Go ahead.
I just figure if you get your basic, you open up one of them ghost towns, you get your university so people can learn something because, you know, a lot of people want to learn something.
And they can do that online now. You're right.
Then you have your hospital. Then you have your little fast foods, like, you know, the basic McDonald's, Applebee's,
right,
or whatever they eat nowadays. You know, just have that fast food right in that ghost town where people, because it's about location. They won't say, oh, I wish I was back in New York to get some of that BBQs, you know, I can get some of that McDonald's. They have it right there. So whatever it is, you know, whatever franchise it is, just have that franchise right there in that little ghost town. And then, you know, their little clothes store, their little theater where they can go see the movies. If they don't want cable, they don't want to stream. They want to go out.
You can set up, matter of fact, we might have to act on that idea you're throwing out there, because you can set up a little community center where people can come in, a place where they can collect their mail, receive their Amazon, socialize, movie nights, game nights, if they need toilet paper, a box of Ritz crackers, want a hamburger, they don't feel like cooking, they can go right to that little
community.
Oh,
that is
center.
So beautiful, LA. You gave me an idea. Like, just have like a, you know how they have the senior citizen center? Instead
right.
of they say home right now, everything, like if they have Amazon, everything could be delivered to that senior citizen center. Or they have
there
a movie
go.
Night, a special movie come out. Because, you know, so they won't have to get stampede with the young people because the old people are not going to create any nonsense. They can have a location for the senior citizen. All the latest movies are going to be playing at that location just for the senior citizens.
Right.
Like that,
right.
You know, I like
that. That's where all is going. And like I say, if you got an internet connection in there, you can have a community.
And Robin, she does that. Robin, she has the you know, she has that Roku thing, and, you know, that could be set up around senior citizen places, you know?
Well, senior citizens or anybody who's interested.
I think the senior citizen, because everybody's getting older. Everybody, every day, every second, somebody's becoming a senior citizen, you know?
Well, that's true.
And then you make them that special offer. You make that offer, hey, we have movies there, we have entertainment. You know, this is some place, you know, you can retire and relax. Enjoy life. You know,
right.
Come
right.
over here and visit and then go back home, you know?
That's true. Let's take another call here, Daryl. Let's see.
Okay,
314, your mic is open.
What's going on, LA?
Oh, it's a nice sunny day here in Florida, so. I like springtime.
Yeah, I sent you some.
How many years?
I was sending you some pictures. Some information on them dome homes, man. They pretty cool.
You know, when I get to that phone, when I open it back up, I'll look that up on email. Thanks for sending it, though. I remember I was watching some videos yesterday of some dome. These particular domes were see-through. See-through domes.
That's a piece
and
of
that's
time.
Like some people that, I mean, it out in the middle of nowhere. And, but, that, you know, anyway, that's an option.
That's a peeping Tom's haven.
Well, yeah, that's one way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. But you were talking about those 3D houses. Me personally, I wouldn't have one of them. But I guess some people out there will.
Well, me personally, now I'm with you on that. Now, here's the reason why I'm not crazy about 3D homes, although you'll probably hear more about it, is because it's going to be a permanent structure. Those 3D homes are made out of cement. So, and we're niche market driven anyway. So for some people that like the idea of a 3D printed house and it's a permanent structure, fine. I don't want to be attached to anything that's going to be classified as real estate and then assessed by the government. And if you don't pay this, that, or the other, the government puts your house up for auction. So that's why I'm not crazy about 3D printing houses. However, that's a niche market that some people are going to buy that and enjoy. So.
Yeah, they will. And you got to get by building codes and all that. I don't think that 3D material has tensile strength.
Well, now you said a very important thing. A lot of the housing we talk about on this podcast would be considered extreme housing. And in 2020, it might happen in 10 years from now, depending on the city. But in 2020, most of your large municipalities, you won't be allowed to build anything like that. That's why you got to go to a remote place to do this stuff, or a rural area.
Well, if it's not, well, you know, some places, if they're not municipalities, they still would be come under some type of county code.
Yeah,
but
that's
it just,
true.
One would just have to see what the heck's going on. But,
I mean, just like you, I'm going to give you a good example. Airbnb has been banned in a few places around the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And that's San Francisco, D.C. It had either been banned or severely restricted. However, if you go to the small towns, and there are a lot more small towns than big towns, Airbnb is okay.
Mm. What is Airbnb?
Go ahead.
What is the Airbnb?
Airbnb, you know, it's instead of going to a hotel, you know, a Hyatt or Holiday Inn, Airbnb is really an app where you can book a place to stay in probably about 65 different locations around the earth now. We've done some podcasts on it. It started by two guys in San Francisco that were behind on their rent. So They rented out three bedrooms using air mattresses. And eventually it caught on and they became billionaires. Now, the city that this started in, which is San Francisco, that same concept is severely restricted. New York City doesn't like it. But there are only a handful of cities that have a population of 1 million or more people, or even 500,000 or more people. So, like where I'm at, for right now, Airbnb is legal.
Mm-hmm.
No, matter of fact, we did a bit a couple of days ago, earlier this week. The state of California has basically outlawed or at least changed the definition of employee versus freelance employee. So they're looking at Uber, you know, which was, you know, apps like Uber and Lyft, which they couldn't regulate. Now they say in California, well, if you're an Uber or a Lyft driver, which was formerly classified, defined as a freelance person, now they're saying companies that use that service or whatever have to be, they redefine them as employees.
Well, you know, here's the thing. That's why come I wouldn't live in California. Them damn Democrats would tax the hell out of you. And then, too, you got a state that's got all these illegals in it, and they signed up for all sorts of all of the social programs and so forth. So they ain't gonna. I mean, the place ain't gonna be able to survive.
Yeah, what's gonna happen is you're gonna drive a lot of that economy underground. Because what essentially people are going to do, and they've been doing it anyway, is, okay, you know what? All right, we can't use the app or do work for this employer. So what they'll do is they'll get private customers and go direct.
Well, you know, what's going to happen is Donald Trump needs to get them fools out of the country. That's what they need to do under all circumstances.
Well, with this coronavirus, I think he's restricted travel. I think he put a travel ban. I think we talked about this yesterday. Played audio. People coming in from Europe, there's a travel ban from Europe to the United States, at least for airlines, I think. So Trump put that in, and then New York Cuomo.
Well, what it was, the EU, which is defunct, got mad because basically the United States not looking at the EU as an entity since Britain has dropped out of it, and I don't blame them.
Right.
So they got kind of peed off.
The EU still exists, though, although Britain dropped out.
Yeah, the big players has dropped out. I think even Germany may be thinking about leaving, which I don't blame them because what's happening is that they the one that would be promoting the inclusion of all these immigrants that you see coming in.
Well, if Germany dropped out, because Germany is the EU's largest economy, so if they dropped out, you know, I never did. Well, put it this way. I know Germans who don't like the euro. They call it a shit currency because everything went up. And that's to the locals. So it would be interesting if Germany dropped out of the EU.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what's going on. But anyway... Now, what kind of material did you order? You build your residence?
What we're doing is I'm doing a combination of I've been looking at a lot of tents and a lot of buildings made, which is a cross between tent and traditional building and the glamping type stuff. So I like it as stylish. I saw a few buildings, homesteads, like 2,000 square feet. It's a combination of stick build and using tent materials. I mean, they've got every creature comfort. The aesthetics are there. I don't need anything 2,000 square feet, but
well, how you go protect it from the ultraviolet rays of the sun?
They got materials for that. They got materials for that. I've been binge watching.
So when it rains, it's gonna be just like falling on a canvas.
Some of it is. They got waterproof. I mean, I've been talking to people that manufacture this stuff, people that bought this stuff. Been binge watching practically all night for the last two or three nights on everything you're talking about: UV, waterproofing, maintenance.
You gonna be able to get insurance on it?
Now, I don't know about that, but
that's
I imagine
first thing you need to check out, because some of the insurance companies won't cover.
You're not paying. We're not talking about structures where you're paying. These people that are buying this stuff are paying cash. Nobody's getting a mortgage.
Yeah, but you got to have insurance on it, though.
Well, that's if you want it.
You got to have homeowner's insurance on it or something.
But that's if you're living in a
because
city.
It's,
now, the people that I'm talking to that have bought into this basically live in remote areas.
Yeah, but they still have insurance on those structures because they can be subjected to anything from earthquake, fire, hail.
A lot of the people that I've talked to that live in these things, I haven't asked that question to all of them. You know, if calamity happens, we'll just build another one.
Yeah, depends on how much it costs to build. But
totally different mindset. They don't need the comfort and convenience of a big city. And you know what? I'm at the point I don't need that. I don't need to be living in a place where the hospital is a 15-minute drive from the house. I don't need to be by.
Yeah, well, that's kind of like a hobby house. Now, I know the monolithic domes, insurance on them, the ones that's made with shotcrete. I've heard of some cases where it's insurance is about $100 a year or less than $200.
So, yeah, something like that is reasonable.
Because there's nothing in them that can burn up.
Yeah. The way insurance is structured, particularly if you find an agent that's connected with Lloyd's of London or reinsure like that, you can find it. You can insure everything, anything.
Yeah, we can insure Robin.
You know what? I guess she's been. I don't know where she is.
Now, I sent you some stuff on them Japanese boat together styrofoam structures. Them things are very expensive. I don't know if it's because of the the shipping here to the U.S. or not, but you can put one of them things together in probably 2 days, the way they designed.
You know what? I never heard of that. Looking at a piece of styrofoam right now.
Yeah, they have. They have styrofoam. It sandwiches in between two materials. Matter of fact, them Jimmy Carter houses, they use that on foundations. The foundation walls are made of styrofoam sandwiched in between plywood or particle board. I don't like particle board. I don't know if it is or not. I haven't priced it, but I don't like particle board. I wouldn't use no particle board in building my house. I'm using plywood.
Well, you know quite a bit about construction. I imagine the house you built.
I just don't trust particle board.
I imagine a house that you built in in Missouri is built to last.
Well, it will, but I'm gonna have to. I'm just about thinking about getting rid of it because I'm not gonna live there no more, and I got it too much house for me.
Yeah, well, everybody's got different tastes and goes, you know.
If people are going to raise kids, they need to have at least a bedroom and a family room. A bedroom for each child, of course, that's what code's called for. And you need a family room for people to gather, a dining room where people
can
eat,
it now, hold
a kitchen
it. Go back to this
prepare food.
For cold now calls for if you got a certain amount of children, each child should have a bedroom.
Yeah, each section.
I'm in a state where, let's take the Jackson family, where the boys will all be in a bedroom, but they don't bunk beds.
Well, Coles nowadays say that, boys and girls, and it's a funny thing, too, but the boys and girls, once they get to a certain age, they got to have their own bed. Now, I don't know what it is nowadays with this gender confusion.
Right. Yeah.
You have to get bulk of code. I used to write, I wrote code for a municipality on health commission and building codes. And I wrote the inspection code checklist where when people moving into a house, you go through a checklist on everything from the wiring, the plumbing, the vents, the yard, before you get my occupancy permit to move in. But a lot of that is contained in BOCA existing structure code and also BOCA building codes for new structures. I guess the, and of course, California had their own code.
Let me ask you this. Let's say you're a landlord and, you got a few rental properties and you want to stay out of trouble with the local authorities, housing authorities, code enforcement. How would you suggest a person go about looking for and subcontract or hiring either a current or former code enforcement person that can consult you on how to stay ahead of the game so you won't get cited for, violations?
Well, you stay ahead of the game by doing what you're supposed to do. Because if something happens to somebody in the house and you don't show them some shortcuts, you're going to be facing some liabilities.
But what I'm saying is, how would you go about finding one that you can have, everybody work, even you don't even have to be a landlord. In other words, you know somebody that can do your plumbing, you got a handyman, that you can call. I'm talking about how would you suggest going about finding somebody that has been
employed? Well, if you got code violations, you can do. Anybody can do the work, depending on what it is. Electrical work, they may want an electrical contractor to come. Depends on what it is. If it's just plain wall outlets, those things need to be changed out.
No, but what I'm talking about, how could I find somebody who has actually worked in code enforcement or is working in code enforcement that I can hire as a consultant, to do maybe yearly or inspections or whatever?
Well, the only time you do inspections is when somebody is about to move in to the place. It ain't no, once somebody's in a place, you can't go in there and inspect the place and say they need to do this. It's only when, unless there's some citations or some complaints. Code officials can move people out of the houses, get people out of the houses quicker than the police can because they are citing safety.
Yeah.
But the only time that inspections come about is when, especially the interior, is when people have moved out and somebody want to move in. Before they can move in, the place has to be internally inspected. Externally, you can do that anytime. You can stand on the sidewalk and look at violations without going onto the property.
Well, a lot of people who can't pay the rent or behind on paying the rent or whatever, they might they might create a code violation. Stopped up toilet. All right.
Well, if the toilet is stopped up and remains stopped out, you can have the place abandoned. A cold official can. That's a health issue.
All right, well, here's been our experience. Tenants behind on rent. So what they do, and I'm going to give you one example of this. They defecated in the toilet, filled it all the way up to the brim. Then they call code enforcement. Code enforcement goes by the property, sees it, then contacts me. Okay. Now, I'm thinking, and then, of course, I sent somebody over there. Now, the whole thing was, I don't see why code enforcement didn't call them out for that.
Well, that's what they were supposed to do. That's not your fault. Before they moved in, the toilet was working fine.
Exactly.
And if it is to that state, then the code enforcement can have them to get the hell out the house within a certain given amount, a short amount of time, probably a day or two. You got to go. You got to get out of here, especially if you got kids.
Right, and they had kids. And my personal experience is they code enforcement, like I said, in my personal experience, they never called the tenant on none of that stuff. It's getting here, repair it, which we did immediately, because that's not a difficult fix. But that's a common
thing.
Yeah,
let's flush the damn toilet.
Right. Because it was nothing
Negro wrong with that damn trifling. That's why I come out on fools like that. I've been on shot some damn body.
And now, the way it is like I say, they matter of fact, I'm looking at that some municipalities, I can't say all of them, but some municipalities are basically just, they go for the deepest pocket, okay, landlord, this, they don't care. They don't even look at the cause of it.
Yeah, I understand
like
what you're saying. That's why I wouldn't mess with nobody. If people ain't got no place to stay, so be it. And
right.
Yeah, because it's fools like that that makes it bad for everybody else. And you trying to provide something, you get called out on that. You are subjected to all sort of extremist costs and problems. So it's not worth it. If I was going to mess food with some property, it would be some commercial property. But as far as that stuff, I sold all my property in 2005 before the housing broke. And then I bought all that stuff for my daughter. And we tried to get elderly people in them and not these young fools. But in the city of St. Louis, they wanted you to put stainless steel flues in the chimney for a gas water heater and gas. Well, they went to the new type of furnaces where you could vent them with PVC. But they wanted stainless steel liner in the chimney for the water heater flue. Nobody going to be doing all this stuff.
Right.
It's expensive.
Well, all right, what's this little bit after 12? I'm going to wrap it up for today. At least for this version. Everybody have a good weekend.